I'd like now to welcome to the program Wendy Kiefover and Kat Cannon. They're both from Wild Earth Guardians, and they're here to talk about the trap ban on public lands and the consequences for wildlife, for New Mexicans. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Great. Hi, Mary Charlotte. Thanks for having us.
Hi.
Good to have you both. So let's talk, first of all, what is this trap ban? What kind of traps are we talking about? How did they get banned, and what is the status of the trap ban right now?
Well, we requested that the Game Commission in 2009 open up what's called the fur bearer regulations, and so those are the animals that are trapped because they have commercial value for their pelts. And then we asked in June that the commission consider a public lands trap ban. And then last year, we got Governor Richardson, he put into place a trap ban on the Blue Range of the Mexican Wolf Recovery Area for a six-month period. And the Game and Fish was to do a study to see if trapping indeed harmed Mexican wolves. And as of Thursday, the Game Commission made a ruling on this issue, and they determined to lift the trap ban in the Blue Range Mexican Wolf Recovery Area. They also opened up trapping to even a larger extent than it had been before we had made our request.
So was the study done to determine the effects of trapping on public lands?
Yeah, the study was the Game and Fish commissioned the New Mexico State University Wildlife Cooperative Unit to investigate that study, and it was completed, and they've withheld it pending it getting published in a peer-reviewed journal. So the study was never made public, and yet the Game Commission made a ruling to open up trapping anyway.
There was an editorial and a number of articles that have been written in the various newspapers about this as raising some real questions about open government decisions that affect New Mexicans, both human and animal, I suppose you could say, are being made that are not, studies are done and being paid for the public, but are not being disclosed to the public.
Right, exactly. Not only was that study not made available, but we found evidence that Game and Fish was colluding with the trapping industry and the livestock industry over this rulemaking process, and we went to their offices to look at those records. We sent some volunteers, and it looks like a lot of the records that we were looking for were withheld, and so we think that Game and Fish is in collusion with the trapping industry and the livestock industry, and therefore we got this really terrible result from the Game Commission last Thursday.
There were a lot of petitions that were circulating about this that went, I guess, to the New Mexico Department of Fish and Game. It was a big, I guess it wasn't a big impact, but it was a large number of people who signed those. Is that correct?
It was, we reckon it's between 7,000 and 10,000 people, if not more, and Kat can speak to that.
Right. So apparently we have between 7,000 and 10,000 signatures, and I know that at the Game Commission hearing yesterday, about 23 trappers spoke in favor of trapping, and I'm pretty sure that their total amount of letters sent to the Game Commission was fewer than 400. So it seems that they're really not acting in the public interest, because if that were the case, they would be making a decision that reflected the opinion of 65% of New Mexicans rather than 2,000 trappers.
So let's help me walk through this whole chain of, I guess you would call it, bureaucracies. Now, there's the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, there's the New Mexico Department of Game and Fish, there's the Game Commission, there's the research unit that did the study. Wendy, can you place for us can you give us an understanding of who all these players are and how they interact?
Yeah, absolutely. So the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, their purview is to protect endangered species, and the Mexican wolf being one of those. In fact, the Mexican wolves are probably the most endangered species on the planet, or one of the most endangered species on the planet in the wild. There's less than 60 individuals roaming, you know, on the Gila and Apache Sitgreaves National Forests. And then the state wildlife management agency, that's the New Mexico Department of Game and Fish, and they make regulations pertaining to wildlife that are not on the endangered species list. And then ruling Game and Fish Department is what is called the Game Commission, and that body is appointed by the governor, and it sits at the behest of the governor. And so it's a very political body, and so we get very politicized decisions.
The Game Commission, I guess, was recently appointed by Governor Martinez, is that correct?
Yes.
And who's on it? I mean, what types of people are on it?
It's a very narrow interest group representing a lot of livestock growers and sportsmen, so the hunters and anglers. But it does not represent the broad public. It's not a democratic institution.
If you actually look at their biographies on the website, only two of them really have a background in wildlife management or wildlife science, and most of them are avid hunters and anglers, and several are members of the NRA, and one of them is actually on the board of directors for the Cattle Growers Association. And if you go to that website, there's a banner on their main page that says, "Speak now or forever keep your trap shut." And then they go on to urge their members to send letters to the game commissioners in favor of allowing traps on public lands. And Scott Beidegan, who is a game commissioner, is on the board of directors for the Cattle Growers Association. So that just kind of gives you an idea of how narrow the backgrounds are.
Now, the Cattle Growers Association is in favor of trapping, not because they're trying to catch valuable fur-pelted animals, but because they don't like wolves. Am I understanding that correctly?
Right. They basically don't like wildlife, period. It doesn't matter if it's elk or deer or coyotes or whatever. They always view themselves pitted against wildlife. And we just did an investigation involving wolves in the Northern Rockies, and we looked at the kill to livestock reported by the U.S. Department of Agriculture and compared those data with data derived by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service actually ground-truthed the livestock kills. That is, they went out and they verified the kills, whereas the U.S. Department of Agriculture, they just rely on livestock growers to tell them what the kill, you know, how many livestock have died. Nevertheless, even in the Northern Rockies, of the total inventory of cattle, less than 2% died from wolves. And nationwide, of the total number of cattle and sheep grown in the U.S., less than 1%, one-half of 1% have died from native carnivores and domestic dogs. So it's absolutely a minuscule number of cattle and sheep that get killed by native carnivores and domestic dogs. Far more important are weather, disease, birthing problems, and things like that to livestock growers. But yet they still have this just unbelievable ire against wildlife, and it's completely misplaced, and it's not based on any reason or rationale.
When you talk about native carnivores and domestic dogs, those are two very different groups. I mean, are livestock being killed by sheepdogs and things like that?
It's probably feral dogs. So when we look at cattle and sheep data, the carnivore most likely to kill sheep or cattle are coyotes, and then secondarily, it's domestic dogs. So it's probably not sheepdogs, it's probably just feral dogs that pack up and kill.
And so then when you take that one half of 1% and it includes all of these carnivores, wolves are an even more minuscule part of that.
They're at the bottom of the list. They're absolutely at the bottom of the list. They're not an important, I mean, in terms of numbers, they're not an important livestock predator in terms of the overall numbers. And that is, you know, and that might be because of, you know, they're not wide ranging. I mean, they've been killed back to less than 5% of their historic range. There's only wild wolves really in Idaho, Montana, Wyoming. There's a few dispersing to Oregon and Washington, and then we have basically a handful of wolves in New Mexico and Arizona.
Is there restitution for cattle growers who do have their livestock killed by carnivores?
Yes. Some states pay compensation, and I think those compensation programs are completely wrong because what it does is it institutes, you know, more subsidies and it institutes fraud. So what I think should happen is livestock growers should not get compensated. They should use non-lethal alternatives to protect their livestock. So, you know, keeping cattle and sheep in pens at night, using lambing and calving sheds, electric fencing. There's a whole host of things that they can use to protect their livestock. There's, you know, this is one industry that gets so many subsidies, and predator control is one of the many. They get, you know, the USDA Wildlife Services spends, you know, $126 million a year killing our wildlife, largely for livestock interests. And we just did the numbers on that. Kat and I put together the numbers. There was like 112,000 or 114, I don't remember the number off the top of my head. But so they go up an aerial gun and they poison and they trap and they shoot and they kill pups in the den. They do all sorts of horrible things for the livestock industry. And yet the numbers don't bear out this huge waste of resources and the enormous amount of killing that goes on. And especially when we're talking about wolves and mountain lions and grizzly bears and things like that. I mean, these species are very rare on the landscape, and it's really sad.
We're talking to Wendy Kiefover and Kat Cannon from Wild Earth Guardians.
So I think also what people don't realize is that wolves play a really essential role in maintaining the health of ecosystems. I mean, they prey on animals that are unfit, which helps keep populations healthy. And they also prevent large herbivores like elk and deer from becoming overpopulated. And that helps maintain biodiversity. I mean, we've seen that when deer and elk become too abundant, they overgraze, and then they destroy much of the plant base. And then that makes habitat less suitable for other species. And when we reintroduce the wolves to Yellowstone, the concentration of elk herds was reduced, and so the damage that they were doing to meadows and wetlands by over-browsing was reduced as well, and that actually improved vegetation around streams and increased biodiversity in those areas for birds and fish and beavers and other species. And then you have people who are worried about coyotes killing their livestock. Well, wolves also help to reduce coyote populations. And that happened in Yellowstone as well. When they introduced wolves, coyote populations were reduced by as much as 50% in some areas, and that helped the populations of pronghorn and red fox come back. And so I think there's just this huge lack of understanding about how integral wolves really are in the entire ecosystem.
It's such an important and interesting point, is that when you remove one species, it has an effect on so many other species in ways that are often really counterintuitive.
Right, exactly. Right. And then, you know, bringing it back to the New Mexico trapping situation, we know that 23,000 bobcats have been trapped in New Mexico over the last decade. And the reason we know that is under the Convention on International Trade in Endangered Species, bobcat pelts have to be tagged. What we don't know is how many swift foxes, kit foxes, gray foxes, and all sorts of species who are trapped for their fur have been killed. So what we're seeing in New Mexico, and I think it's only going to get worse with this decision on Thursday, is we're going to see even more trapping, even across broader landscapes, and it's really a shame. And so one of the things that we're going to do, we boycotted the Game Commission hearing because it was absolutely a kangaroo court. It is a body appointed by Susana Martinez, a body that is absolutely hostile to wildlife. So we're going to hold our own hearing. We're going to hold a public hearing on the trapping issue, and we're going to have it in Albuquerque on September 14th, I think at the main library, and we're calling it Trapping on Trial. We're going to have our own citizen panel that actually is a broad array of New Mexicans that's going to sit and listen to New Mexican citizens and listen to the issue of trapping with fortitude and not just from the industry point of view.
What are some of the rules around trapping? In other words, if I go ahead and go on the internet and buy myself a steel leg trap and go up to the Santa Fe National Forest, can I just put it down and come and see what I get, you know, a few weeks later?
I'll let Kat answer. Go ahead.
So right now trappers pay $20 for a trapping license, and after that there are no bag limits, so they can kill as many animals as they want. And I think the setback limit now for trails is still 25 yards, but they increased it to half a mile for dwellings, boat ramps, and campgrounds. And they are required to check their traps every day and to have an identification number on their traps, but they definitely do not comply with those rules all the time. And so at the end of the trapping season, they're supposed to submit a report to the Department of Game and Fish, which sort of summarizes the animals that they've taken. And their only penalty for not complying with that is an $8 late fee. And after they've paid that, their trapping license is renewed. So the regulations are just so lenient. We've seen a lot of a huge drop in compliance. I mean, a few years ago, I think it was up to 79%, and last year it was down to 29%.
Compliance with the rules?
Yeah, compliance right. With these reporting at the end of the year. You have to report how many animals you killed. And the other thing that's going on is with the trapping regulations, they only have to put the traps 25 yards from a trail that is designated on a federal map, so like a Forest Service map or a Bureau of Land Management map. But if it's a social trail, which there's thousands of miles of those in New Mexico, just people going out and going on hiking trails, there's no setback distance at all. And so we've seen a huge uptick in the number of dogs and even cats getting caught in these traps. And we're getting calls all the time from folks who have had negative trap experiences involving pets. There was a woman in Taos, around Taos, whose two dogs got caught, and in the process of releasing the first dog, her own hand got trapped in a leg hold trap, and she was unable to open that trap, and she had her hand stuck in the trap for a half an hour, and she suffered numbness and problems with her hand for several weeks afterwards, and she incurred, you know, hundreds of dollars in not only medical expenses for herself, but in veterinary medical expenses, which the trappers don't have to pay for. And oftentimes the trappers, if there's a dog in a trap, they'll kill it rather than, risk letting it loose. And so it's just, you know, it absolutely affects everyone. So if you recreate in New Mexico, trapping should be something that you consider. You know, if you have search and rescue dogs, if you have hunting dogs, it's, you know, that danger is out there looming, and there's no notification to people that traps are in the area.
I think that the number of people who have had dogs caught in traps or who have encountered dogs caught in traps is a lot higher than what we might expect. I was recently tabling at a rock climbing gym, and over 2 days I had several people tell me that either their dogs were caught in a trap or they'd come across a dog in a trap and had no idea how long it had been there. And just the process of releasing a dog, I mean, it's already in so much pain. It's a terrifying situation, and then a lot of times the dog will just run away. And I think because so many people don't know sort of the, the severity of this trapping issue, they don't report that to anybody because they might just think that it's a freak incident. So I think there are even more cases of that happening out there than we can imagine.
There is another argument that this is, and this is one of the kind of New Mexico is open for business arguments, that if you allow trapping, that's a part of the economy and that it'll be good for the economy if more people are out trapping animals that they can sell the pelts of. How do you respond to that?
Well, there are only approximately 2,000 trappers in the state of New Mexico, and I know that the amount of revenue the state gets from people who are wildlife watchers is somewhere between $200 and $300 million a year. So to me, that argument really just reflects Governor Martinez's interest. I mean, she has said that that she's worried because of ranching families and loss of their livelihoods. But I think that in this case, she needs to take a stand that reflects science and public interest.
Yeah, and the economics of wildlife watching tourism, which is enormous.
Right.
You know, it's clearly enormous in New Mexico. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service does these periodic surveys of wildlife recreation, and by far, far more people spend money doing wildlife recreation. That includes all the hospitality, gasoline, you know, buying bird seed, everything that you can imagine. It's something like, I don't remember, I think it's like $40 billion a year in America. And we know that wolf-watching tourism in Idaho, New Mexico, and Wyoming is $36 million a year. It's a huge amount of money. And so the fact that they're saying, you know, that a handful of people are going to benefit from you know, trapping animals and selling their fur, yeah, that might be the case. And especially in the case of bobcats, there's been an uptick in the price of their pelts. Some pelts may reach $600 a piece if it's a super high quality pelt. And so what we've seen is this macabre rush on wildlife in New Mexico and you know, a handful of greedy people trapping out the state's wildlife against the public interest of the rest of the people who would like to witness those wildlife, you know, in the wild.
And not only the people who want to witness them, but there are also, as you were alluding to before, some real benefits to ecosystems of having a balanced ecosystem with wild, you know, a lot of these wildlife species in it.
Yeah, and, you know, if you're a farmer or a rancher, the last thing you want are a lot of rodents, you know, overrunning your crops or even competing with livestock, right? So having these carnivores in the ecosystem can actually benefit the livestock growers if they were so mindful to think of it in those terms.
We're talking to Wendy Kiefover and Kat Cannon from Wild Earth Guardians. There's another aspect of the whole trapping issue that has to do with just the simple cruelty of catching an animal, a sentient being. You know, these wolves are seriously conscious, beautiful animals. In a leg trap, the way they are trapped, the way they die, or a bobcat or any other animal.
Right. So oftentimes these animals will actually remain in the traps for days, despite the fact that trappers are required to check their traps every day. And when these animals are immobilized, I mean, they can experience dehydration, hunger, self-mutilation, and predation. And if they do escape from the trap, they definitely have a reduced ability to survive. And a lot of these traps definitely don't strike on the intended body part, and a lot of them don't render the animals unconscious in the recommended time. So Born Free USA is an organization that recently did an undercover investigation on trapping in the United States, and they have videos from several of the different states which captures different trappers and their killing methods, and it's just absolutely horrific. And, I mean, to me, the animal cruelty side of this is enough of an argument for why trapping shouldn't be allowed on public lands at all.
We've got just a minute left. Wendy, you want to tell us the details about this trapping trial event in September?
Yeah, So Mary Charlotte, we're going to be hosting an event. It's called Trapping on Trial, September 14th at the Main Library in Albuquerque. And I believe we're going to start around 2 in the afternoon and go till about 7 p.m. And we have a citizen panel that consists of a federal court judge. We have an attorney. We have a hunter. We have a wildlife advocate. There's a whole host of people from all different walks of life that actually represent the broad base of New Mexicans, and we are going to hold a public hearing in a large place, so that the public can attend this hearing and to learn more about trapping, rather than what the Game Commission did, and that was to hold a hearing in Clayton, New Mexico, and made it off limits to the public on purpose, and as a result, muzzled the public, gagged the public. And so we want to turn things around and make the public aware about the dangers of trapping, the cruelty of trapping, and the host of dogs and endangered species, and even wildlife that are not considered endangered, such as bobcats and swift foxes, and look at the plight that happens to them, so in a very public forum.
Wendy Kiefover and Kat Cannon are with Wild Earth Guardians. They are on the web at wildearthguardians.org. Thank you both very much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Great. Thank you, Mary Charlotte, for having us.
You've been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're streaming live on the web at ksfr.org, podcasting at santafe.radiocafe.org. Thanks to Dotfoil Computer Services. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes. You can find us at facebook.com/radiocafe, and my email address is radiocafe@ksfr.org. Stay tuned for the BBC, then local news, then jazz.